are Locked On Diamondbacks, your daily Arizona Diamondbacks podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome back to the Locked On Diamondbacks podcast. You're part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Listening to who? The always wonderful host of this podcast, Miller Thomas, multimedia journalist, and I'm a graphic designer. So please go check out my website, MillerThomas24.myportfolio.com. There you can see all my latest work, from my packages to my articles to my photos and my graphic design. Don't forget to follow me on Twitter at CreatorThomas24 for my personal account, at LockedOnDimebacks on both Twitter and Instagram for the podcast handle. And as I promised, today is part two of that conversation with RM Lane. Today he puts on his Locked On MLB Prospects hat because we are talking Paven Smith, Josh Rojas, and Taylor Widener on today's pod. And we give our predictions for the rest of the series. So you're going to want to stay tuned for that. But first, if you're the type of baseball fan that can't help but get giddy over prospects, we have the podcast for you. Locked On MLB Prospects, hosted by minor league play-by-play voice RM Lane, who you will hear on today's pod, is the only daily podcast devoted entirely to the stars of tomorrow. Follow Locked On MLB Prospects on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. All right. Let's jump into that conversation with RM Lane. Looking ahead at the rest of this series, I was looking up the probable pitchers on Google for the Marlins. I saw Luke Weaver pitching tomorrow, but for the next 2 days for the Marlins, it was empty. It said TBD. So, Aram, who is pitching for the Marlins these next 2 days?
So, I'm assuming we're going to see Pablo Lopez one of the two games. Mm-hmm. That's a guarantee. Outside of that, I can give you some potential guys, and we have no guarantees because right now the Marlins are missing Eliezer Hernandez and Sixto Sanchez, as I mentioned. So that's two spots out of the rotation. They've had a few different guys come in and make spot starts, but they've kind of gone up and down. They've been using a Rule 5 draft pick in Paul Campbell to start a majority of the ball games as of late. He's made four starts now, just kind of filling in and has not done a very good job. But now Paul Campbell just got popped 80 games for PEDs. Oof. So now he's gone, and the Marlins have to figure out either which minor league pitcher they're going to bring up, or if they're going to do a bullpen game, or if they're, just going to try and piece it together with one of the guys that they have on and try and stretch them out for a start. It's going to be interesting, but you're going to see Pablo one of those games, which is one of the Marlins' better arms, and then it's going to be anyone's guess for the other ball game.
Hey, I'm rooting for the D-backs to win, but I got Pablo Lopez on my fantasy team too, so I'm hoping he balls out. Hey, he could go, whole game, complete game, allowing one earned run, and the D-backs win. I think I'll be okay with that. He could still give me like 30 fantasy points, and I think we'll be squared away, honestly.
Yeah, he's a good guy to have. I think he's one of the more underrated arms in baseball, and just a really good fastball changeup guy. And I think that's a guy you hold on to on the fantasy team. He's going to give you a quality start. Whether the Marlins win, can't promise that, but I think he'll give you a quality start tomorrow, especially at home.
Oh, yeah. I talk about my fantasy team a lot, and I built my team this year through pitching, honestly. It was like three of my first like five picks were pitchers. I took Shane Bieber, like the fourth overall pick. I just felt like there's a real value in pitching, and I went all in on pitching this year. How do you feel about that? Shane Bieber, fourth overall, ahead of Jacob DeGrom.
Ahead of DeGrom?
ahead of DeGrom.
Oh, my gosh. I like the Shane Bieber pick. Ahead of DeGrom is a bold move. But, right now DeGrom's banged up and Bieber's still dealing. So I do like the pitching-oriented move, especially as, with hitting, there's so many guys that you can find in between, that just stand out, like a Josh Rojas, who we'll talk about, to fill out your offense. So I like the pitching-first move.
Yeah, because Shane Bieber, he won the pitching triple crown last year. So I was like, how can I go wrong with that? And let me pull up his baseball reference. He's led the league in strikeouts he leads the league this year in strikeouts, and then led the league last year in strikeouts and had 259 the year before that. I was like, can't go wrong with a Shane Bieber over here. But back to baseball, the real stuff. We don't have to talk about fantasy anymore. Speaking of fastball changeup with Pablo Lopez, we got Luke Weaver on the mound tomorrow. He's basically just stop throwing his breaking stuff. He doesn't really throw a curveball, a slider, or anything like that. He's pretty much fastball changeup nowadays. And I just want to know, I'm putting you kind of on the spot, just from what you remember from Luke Weaver. I know you're a big prospect guy, so what did you think of Luke Weaver as he was coming up through the ranks? This might be putting you on the spot a little bit, but I want to go just off the top of your dome, no notes. What do you remember from Luke Weaver when he was coming through the Cardinals system?
Yeah, I know. I like the test. I dude, honestly, I was really surprised to see the struggles from Weaver because I liked him as a prospect. And you make a good point. He stops using the breaking ball as much. I liked the breaking ball when he was a prospect. And it just, again, it just kind of shows you how unpredictable it is. But the changeup always flashed, you know, the ability to be his best pitch. And I always think it was his best pitch. And working off of the fastball, which he's able to get a decent amount of swings and misses off that fastball. I think he's salvaged, you know, and he's not going to be the number two type of guy that you were hoping he'd be when you got that trade done. But I think he's still now, as you mentioned, changing the pitch usage, now improving the command. He's not what I thought he would be, but he's definitely salvaged his career. And, you know, there's something to be said about that. But yeah, I was looking at him as a potential solidified number two, worst case number three type of guy. So not quite where we thought he would be.
Yeah, and we're still holding out hope that he could be a number three, but you never know. I mean, I don't know how long he could last with just a fastball changeup. He might start introducing those other breaking pitches as the year moves along and he just builds supreme confidence with those two pitches, but I'm not entirely too sure. He's been a lot better this year than he was in 2020, where it seems like he just gave up home runs left and right, and he didn't have one start last year where he went through at least six innings completed. So that just lets you know how bad he was in 2020, but the next day, the final game of the series, you're going to get to see Madison Bumgarner on the mound. So how does that feel for you? You're going to see three-time World Series champion Madison Bumgarner on the mound. Are you a little scared to see that?
So I wouldn't have been like a couple weeks ago, because I feel like he has just been brutal since the, you know, since really he got hurt on that ATV accident. I don't know if they have, if there's a direct correlation or whatever it is. I would assume there is, because he has not really been good since then. But now all of a sudden he's lights out. He throws that shortened perfect game, right? Or was it a no-hitter? Shortened no-hitter?
It was a no-hitter, pseudo-no-hitter.
Pseudo-no-hitter. Look, I remember, you know, CC Sabathia, right? He really struggled as he aged a little bit. And then he was such an incredible starter that he just was able to reinvent himself a little bit. If that's what we're seeing with Mad Bum, then he's going to carve up this Marlins team tomorrow or day after tomorrow, because they don't have it really like going for them right now, where if you have a polished arm, that's going to make you get yourself out. A guy like Mad Bum could kind of eat the Marlins alive with the way the offense has looked.
Well, we'll see, because this will just be another good test against not a very great offense to see if this little stretch is real, because back-to-back good starts now for Madison Bumgarner. He's putting together a little streak where he's actually looked pretty competent, because before these last couple of starts, he led all qualified major league starters in earned runs allowed since the start of 2020. So he was literally the worst pitcher in baseball for about 15 starts. So I'm finally glad to see him turn it around, because this is by far the highest paid guy on the D-backs. I mean, he's the only one making double digit money. So the D-backs definitely need him to be good, especially when you consider Luke Weaver's not the guy that we might have been hoping for. Zach Gallen's been kind of hurt. This rotation needs a guy like Madison Bumgarner to kind of turn back the clock a little bit, because he's still only about 30, 31 years old. It's not even like he's that old, honestly.
Yeah, that's the thing, is it just seems like he fell off a cliff all of a sudden. So, you know, maybe he can find it a little bit. And I think that's very possible.
Arm and I will talk about Taylor Widener's emergence, but first, I want to talk to you guys about Built Bar, because Built Bar is back, more improved, and more delicious than ever before. They have 18 amazing flavors, but 6 new flavors. Caramel brownie, cookies and cream, cherry barcia, lemon almond cheesecake, carrot cake, and apple almond crisp. The bars are covered in 100% chocolate, and they're both soft and easy to chew. Now, the reason why I love Built Bars is not just because of their great taste, but it tricks me. I think that I'm eating a candy bar when in reality, I'm actually eating a protein bar. It's low in calorie, low in sugar, high in protein, and high in fiber, and it's great for that keto diet. If you don't know what to get for Mother's Day, get a Built Bar box. Most moms love the Built Bar, and it's a great Mother's Day gift. If you go to BuiltBar.com, use promo code LOCK15, you'll get 15% off your next order. Promo code LOCK15 for 15% off at BuiltBar.com. This episode is brought to you by 1010, a capsule collection of diamond rings that are responsibly sourced, limited edition designs at fair price points. 1010 is an exclusive collection of 10 creative styles of diamond rings designed by 10 of the most distinctive designers working today. Rings sure to bring joy into her life. Using only diamonds responsibly sourced from Botswana, 10 female design masters have each produced a uniquely beautiful ring, ideal for engagement, Mother's Day, or simply a beautiful conversation piece. They're the perfect way to bring light into her life. They're available now through Mother's Day only on BlueNile.com. Just search the words 10 by 10. This collection features high quality, fine jewelry that will surprise and delight and fairly priced, so you can give her something special and truly meaningful. If you're on the hunt for the perfect, unique ring she'll treasure forever, you're definitely going to want to check this out. They won't be around for long, so find them now by searching the words 10 by 10 only at BlueNile.com. All right, all right, all right. Let's get back into it. All right, now it's time to get your notes out, Aram, because we're getting close to the end of this pod, and I want to switch gears a little bit. You're going to change hats, take off the Lockdown Marlins hat, put on the Lockdown MLB Prospects hat, because I want to first start off by talking about a little Paven Smith, because before we hopped on here, you're talking about how you kind of believe in Paven Smith. I don't want to take all your thunder right now, but Paven Smith, I've liked the way he's looked at the plate. There's been a lot of talk about how he's just not a thumper. He doesn't have a lot of power, and that's true. He's not a power hitter for a first baseman who was drafted in the first round. But when I watch him at the plate, he just makes good contact. He knows he has a good approach to the game. He knows what to do with the pitches. He's not trying to do too much out there. Honestly, he's not trying to swing for the fences. Whatever the pitchers give him, he just takes and gives it back, honestly. So what are your thoughts on Paven Smith? And do you, it sounds like you kind of believe in him, don't you?
Yeah, I really do. And you already stole some of my thunder there. I think your take on him was perfectly accurate, where even for a majority of his professional career, where his prospect stock was falling a little bit just because he wasn't producing, he was always a good hitter. But as a first baseman, you know, or a corner outfielder, you want to see those guys do some more damage and be able to, you got to hit for some power if you're playing a corner in Major League Baseball nowadays. But what he was always good at is he didn't swing and miss a ton, and he's still great at that. But the difference is this year, I've seen him kind of be a little bit more aggressive, but like, I like to call it controlled aggression, where he's still not expanding the zone, but he's attacking pitches in his counts. And you can see it through the numbers too, because he's in a really exclusive club that I like to look at to see guys that are consistently hitting the ball and hitting the ball hard, which is, you know, two objects of baseball essentially. But players that have over a 90% zone contact rate and over a 90 mile per hour exit velo is a very short list. Manny Machado, Alex Verdugo, Michael Brantley, Albert Pujols, Mookie Betts, and Paven Smith. You know, that means Paven Smith's locked in.
Drop the knowledge.
That's a guy that's not missing pitches in the strike zone. And the thing is I like putting that exit velo in there, because there's a lot of hitters that don't miss a lot of pitches that are able to put the bat on the ball, but they don't hit the ball hard. And I think what we were talking about, that was part of the problem with Smith. Now he's hitting the ball hard, and there's a lot to be excited about there. I think he just needs to work on getting a little bit more carry on the ball, you know, lifting the ball a bit more on occasion. But the club that he's in is for real.
So do you think he's kind of a little Eric Hosmer-y then? Because there's a lot of talk about how he was a first baseman who didn't really have a launch angle or things like that. So do you kind of see him in that mold? Or
I think that's a really good comp, because Hosmer always had that power potential too and just wasn't really tapping into it. And I think we're seeing Smith on a similar arc, where now he's hitting the ball harder. And I think soon we're going to get to the point where he's going to really just try to lift a bit more. You don't want him to get too far away from who he is as a hitter, because even as he is now, he's productive big leaguer and he's starting to hit the ball hard. But of course you'd like to see him, you know, start to hit the ball out of the yard a bit more. And I think he will have no problem being able to do that in Arizona, especially when you got a lot of road games in Colorado and all those things. The ball's going to carry, and you know, he hits it hard enough. There's no doubt about that. It's not that he doesn't have the juice. He just needs to, you know, get that right angle. And he's right there. He's made that big step in that direction this year, in my opinion.
So if he never really turns into a big power slugger, this is kind of more just of your overall philosophy when it comes to players. Do you still think he can be a first baseman, even if he's not a great power slugger, if he's like a 15 home run guy, but still, you know, with a slash line around 300 average, getting on base like 36% of the time? Do you still think that's enough for a first baseman? Do you think his career is probably more of a corner outfielder?
I think that's enough for a first baseman if he's playing good defense. And it seems like he's pretty athletic and can play defense everywhere. And he's been good in the outfield this year.
Yeah, surprisingly.
Yeah, surprisingly good. So I think when you have a guy that in today's game doesn't strike out a lot, there's a value to that. There really is. Just balancing out a lineup where if there is a lot of swing and miss, that you have a guy that you can count on to consistently make contact and the home runs are a bonus. I think that's a great situation still. Like, worst case scenario, if he's a Nick Markakis type, he's going to be playing every day in a corner outfield spot. But I think there's players out there that with that similar profile can play first base. It's kind of team dependent, but I like him in the outfield now. We'll see how the defense progresses, but he's more than good enough, I think, to anchor any of those corner positions and hits enough to justify it.
Yeah, and during the offseason, he worked a lot on his agility drills and just trying to get more athletic. And so far, it's been paying off for him. I've seen him make a couple of spectacular plays, honestly, in the outfield. So I like the way he's looked so far out there. I'm not too sure about playing first baseman full-time this year just because Christian Walker is still there first. So I'm curious to see how they move forward with first base and if they want to elect to be, if they want to elect Pavin Smith as the first baseman of the future, because they still got a guy in Seth Beer in their minor league system acquired from that Zach Greinke trade. Yeah, you laughed a little bit. What was that little laugh there for a second?
No, honestly, because I talk about Seth Beer a lot. I like him. I was just talking about him with my buddy, actually. Like, we were saying he hits. And I think right now there's probably very, very few people in professional baseball that are looking forward to the universal DH more than Seth Beer, because he is one of the worst defenders I've ever seen. But that being said, he rakes. He absolutely mashes. And I think people don't realize how much he mashes because he doesn't get that notoriety that he should get as a prospect because of how much of a liability he is defensively. But if you have that guy in the DH spot, he can slug. And I think, like, he could be a 30 home run guy that hits 275, 280, and you'll take that in the DH spot every day of the week as a left-handed bat. I think at the very, very least, you're looking at a solid platoon bat that's going to destroy right-handed pitching. He's a player. I really think he is. And that's a guy that could do damage too.
Yeah, I want to see Seth Beer because, yeah, as you mentioned, right now he's only ranked 13th among the top 30 in the D-back system, according to MLB.com. You okay over there? So you're not I guess Seth Beer is not really considered a highly touted prospect anymore in the system. But like you said, whenever I look at his numbers, the dude's like batting 320. He's got like 30 plus bombs. But the scouting report always also says that no one needs the universal DH more than Seth Beer. So I'm still curious to what he sees. I think the D-backs have two interesting guys in terms of who could play first base for the future. Maybe they do a platoon situation with both of them. Now we know Pavin Smith can at least play the outfield too. So that just gives him more variety in terms of the positions he can play. But I want to talk about another dude that was acquired in that Zach Greinke trade, because Josh Rojas seems like he's going to be an everyday player for the D-backs right now. And he started the season a little bit slow, but in his last 14 days, in the last 2 weeks, 11 games, he's batting 364, 1127 OPS. We saw him in that game today. He cut the lead a little bit with a solo bomb off Alcantara, the only earned run he gave up. So what do you think about Josh Rojas? Because in terms of like off the field, in terms of not him at the plate, I just love the way the dude walks and just carries himself, honestly, because he seems like a dude with a lot of swagger. And when he's playing, when he's batting, when he's hitting home runs, he just has like a certain swagger to him that not a lot of these players on the D-backs or in baseball really have. So what are your thoughts on Josh Rojas?
Arm and I will get into the debate of who would you rather have right now, Luke Weaver or Taylor Widener. But first, I want to talk to you guys about BetOnline, because BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your sports action. Baseball season is in full swing and can track all the action at BetOnline. This week has tons of sports action on the go, and get all the latest news, odds, and info for all your sporting needs, including MLB, NBA, NHL, and all your UFC MMA action. Before the next pitch, head over to BetOnline on your laptop or mobile device and check out all the great sporting news, sign-up bonuses, and contest information. Don't sit on the sidelines anymore.
as this is your chance to get into the game as teams prep for their runs to the playoffs. Head to the website or use your mobile device to sign up today and receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. Promo code LOCKEDON. All right. Let's wrap up the pod.
Yeah, I totally see that. And I think he's got that 26th round chip on his shoulder as a guy from Hawaii, too, where not a ton of big league players have come out of Hawaii and not a lot of players that have been drafted in the 26th round have ended up in the big league. So having that chip on your shoulder definitely is something that you see kind of shine through in his game. And the thing with Rojas is he's always been a guy that is not going to strike out a lot. And he's going to be able to, you know, play a little bit all over the field. He's not the best defensive shortstop, but you know, he can play all over. And I like him as a really good super utility type of player. But as he's been hitting right now, as you mentioned, he's been playing like a regular. And all of a sudden, there's more power coming out of there. But the thing with Rojas is he doesn't even hit the ball nearly as hard as Pavin Smith. He's only in about the 57th percentile when it comes to exit velocity. But the thing is, he gets that lift. He gets easy carry on his balls, especially when he goes pull side. And you know, that's why he's able to get more out of his power. And that's what I want to see Smith do. But Rojas is finding a way to maximize his ability and really get the most out of his tools. And that's always a great sign. I think long term, you're probably not hoping Rojas is your everyday player, but he's a really good utility player and a platoon type of guy that to get in the 26th round and, you know, from another team and a trade, I think he ends up being a pretty good piece for them. And I think Rojas is definitely a big leaguer that will be there for a little bit.
Okay, so you don't think he's an everyday player, but if it's him versus Nick Ahmed, how do you feel about him being an everyday player then?
Yeah, let Rojas run. Let Rojas okay. run. I know Ahmed's like this star defender, but he can't hit. Mm-hmm. Rojas is not a great defender, but he's not a liability there right now. And I think, if he can really hit consistently enough where he's hitting 20 home runs, then maybe there's an everyday player in there. I think that is possible. More likely a really solid big league utility guy, but there's definitely a potential big leaguer in there. Speaking of like Rojas's, Miguel Rojas was a guy that was a utility player and now has turned into a really solid shortstop. And he's somebody that didn't really have any freakish tools, didn't strike out a lot, and found a way to kind of produce a bit more without the ability to just pulverize the baseball. And I think Rojas is getting there too.
Yeah, and speaking of Rojas, I mean, speaking of Nick Ahmed, because I don't know how long he's been tenured, but he's definitely one of the longest tenured D-backs, and it's not a knock against him. I'm just a guy who loves the offense. I'm not going to the ballpark to watch someone play defense. So for Nick Ahmed, yeah, he's a great defensive player. It kind of fell off a little bit last year. So if Josh Rojas is an upgrade over Ahmed offensively, I'll probably like to see that swap. Probably still be a platoon situation for this year. It seems like everyone on the D-backs is pretty much a platoon player. Everyone is just pretty much playing every position for the D-backs this year. But we're going to wrap up the pod pretty soon. But I want to get to one more player on the D-backs because this is a guy who I really didn't expect much out of him entering the season. He was kind of a last-minute option the D-backs threw into the rotation with that Zach Gallen injury. And he's taken this rotation spot and just kind of ran with it. Now he's pretty much going to be a rotation member the rest of the year. That's Taylor Widener, who you unfortunately are not going to see because he's on the injured list right now. But I know he was kind of a pretty high-ranking prospect, pretty solidly high. So what were your thoughts of Taylor Widener as he came through the system?
Yeah, you know, with him, he was always a higher floor guy because he had the plus changeup and had solid command. And anytime you got an arm with a plus changeup and solid command, there's a good chance that he's going to be a big leaguer in some sort of fashion. The fastball was never just quite there. He didn't really have that third like plus pitch or really secondary pitch outside of the changeup that he could fully rely on. And I think that held him back a little bit. But now that his command has gotten better and better, he's a guy that now is able to maximize his stuff and become the most effective version of himself by having that great command. He doesn't walk many hitters. While he's not going to get a ton of swings and misses, he's able to, you know, just kind of fill up the strike zone and get guys to get themselves out, get a lot of lazy fly balls. And that's kind of been the mold for him. And it's been working so far. And the changeup, I think, is a big reason why. And he looks like a nice little piece in the back end of the rotation. Like you said, he kind of came out of nowhere. And I honestly think that his command plays to be a decent arm. We'll just have to see how the stuff continues to develop for him. And if he could get a third pitch outside of the fastball changeup that he could really rely on, then that could be a big difference maker.
Yeah, because Taylor Widener, I mean, he's got 2.82 ERA. I'm about a couple starts away from sending those Cy Young tweets because this guy's been, man, the D-backs are winning games. And this guy's been a big reason, honestly, because he, with Zach Gallen out, like this dude was literally carrying the rotation for a little bit. So I've been very pleased with what he's done so far. And like a Luke Weaver, as you were saying, he's mostly fastball changeup, but it's been working for him. And I want to know if that's a debate right now, who are you taking in that debate? A Luke Weaver versus Taylor Widener as it stands today?
Ooh, that's a good one. That is a really, really good one. I've been really impressed with Widener, but I could see it going either way where this could bite me, you know, in the back. But I've been really impressed by Widener. I think the changeup, while we have a really good changeup in there with Weaver, I like Widener's changeup better. And honestly, the change is the best pitch in baseball if it's really good. And it seems to be really good for him. And his command is even better than Weaver's. I'm taking Widener. And if he even sees a little bit of an uptick in velo, then you're looking at a pretty solid arm. And he's a big body. It's 6'2", 230, but he gets every ounce of, you know, that height with his release point. And I like him.
Yeah, and I'll probably agree with you too. If you're talking potential, still probably Weaver, just because he has the potential to still potentially add in those breaking pitches down the line with the curveball and things like that, because we've seen him do it before. Taylor Widener is pretty much who he is at this point, but I love that point you made before of a high floor guy, because that's what I see with Taylor Widener. He's not really going to do anything bad out there on the mound. He hasn't given up a ton of home runs. He hasn't given up a ton of earned runs in general. He really doesn't get hit that hard. Luke Weaver, he can go out there and pitch a dominant game, or he can go out there and just blow it up for you. Get absolutely shelled. And we might see that tomorrow, honestly, against the Marlins. You never know with Luke Weaver when he's on the mound. So I think it's an interesting debate.
Yeah, you know, that's the problem is like, do you take the money in front of you, or do you open the mystery box? And that's kind of what it's like. But I think as we continue on here, the further we get along, it more so seems like that mystery box may not have as much in there as you might think. And at least you got a sure thing here, at least closer to a sure thing with a controllable young arm in Widener, that there's value for that no matter what kind of team you are, to have arms like Widener. And you know, he's been a really good story, and he's been impressive.
All right, Aram. D-backs not only play the Marlins this series, but the D-backs play the Mets next, and then after that they're right back here again playing the Miami Marlins. So before we get there, I think the D-backs are winning the next two games in this series. I think they're going to win this series. So I want to get a prediction from you before the next series.
Oh, I think the Marlins are undoubtedly dropping whatever game they're going to piece together guys from the street to try to throw for whatever mystery game we don't know who's pitching for. Pablo Lopez, in whatever game he pitches against who he's going to pitch, that'll be a fun one. I'm curious if it's Bumgarner versus, you know, the really big struggling bullpen that whoever they're going to throw out there, that could be interesting. Lopez versus Weaver. If Weaver has one of his blow up starts, I think the Marlins all of a sudden could end up taking that one. But I think what Weaver has working in his favor is that, you know, he gives up a lot of loud outs and a lot of home runs, and he's pitching in a big time pitcher's park, and it'll be able to hold some of his mistakes a bit more. Honestly, I think the Marlins drop the next two also. So I'm just going to stand with you on that one. I think the Marlins drop the next two, but I think if they're going to win one, it'll be that Lopez start.
We appreciate the truth and honesty, Arm. And this part of the pod won't come out till tomorrow. So we'll already know two games in on how your prediction's going. But tell the people where they need to find you, because you got a lot of channels, a lot of social media channels. You're a busy guy. So where can they find you?
Yeah, definitely a lot of switching between accounts. But you can find me at Locked On MLB Prospects, which I'll be talking about prospects across the entire landscape. Very excited about my guy, Corbin Carroll, just recently talked about him and his high A assignment and why I think he'll be in double A pretty quickly. And you can follow me at RMLateNate on Twitter as well. And yeah, I'm looking forward to talking prospects the rest of the year. Finally, I have the minor league season, so I'll have a bunch of coverage that way.
All right, thanks, buddy. And be on a lookout for another DM in a couple of weeks since our teams are playing each other once again.
Absolutely, man. I'm looking forward to it.
No worries. Thanks, buddy, for hopping on. Appreciate it.
No worries, dude. Always fun.
That's it for this edition of the Locked On Dimebacks podcast. And remember, get all the sports news you need in under 20 minutes with the Locked On Today podcast. Host Peter Bukowski updates you on the latest news in every major sport with the help of our local experts. Follow the Locked On Today podcast on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. Thank you to Arm Lane for hopping on the last two pods here. And as always, stay safe, stay healthy, and go follow Arm Lane on Locked On Marlins and Locked On MLB Prospects.